The Ministry of Culture rose from the edge of Wenceslas Square like a slab of frozen grief. Its concrete face caught the November light and gave nothing back, only a flat, gray reflection that made the building seem less built than grown, as though the earth itself had hardened around it overnight. Vera Novikova stood at the glass doors for a long moment, watching her breath fog the air. Inside, the lobby smelled of wet wool and floor wax, the particular combination that meant the janitor had mopped that morning, but the radiators still hadn't warmed. She pulled her scarf tighter and pushed through. Her office was on the third floor, a narrow room with one window that looked out over the rooftops of the old town. The desk was scarred with ink stains and cigarette burns left by whoever had sat here before her. She kept her satchel canvas, frayed at the edges, bought secondhand from a market stall near Karlovy Vary on the chair beside her. Inside it, a thermos of weak coffee, a pot of black ink, and a small notebook where she recorded the day's work, not for anyone else, just for herself. A habit from before. The typewriter on her desk was a Remington, heavy and loud, the kind that sounded like gunfire when you struck the keys. It belonged to the ministry, not to her, and she treated it with a careful reverence, as though it might turn on her if she pressed too hard. Today's task arrived at 9 o'clock in a manila envelope stamped with the red seal of the editorial board. A poem, translated from the Bohemian tongue into English for an anthology being compiled for distribution to Western universities. Innocuous enough, verses about rivers, about winter, about the persistence of memory. The kind of thing that could pass inspection because it meant nothing at all. She opened the envelope and laid the pages on her desk. The original Czech text occupied the left column, her English rendering would go on the right. She picked up her pen and began. The poem was by someone named Jan Cavanwell, that's what the signature read. She knew the name. Cavan had been published in the literary journals before the purges, before the ministry started screening everything for ideological purity. His work had once been considered daring, even dangerous. Now it was simply archived, filed away behind the walls of approved literature. Vera worked methodically. She translated line by line, checking each phrase against the rhythm of the original. The Czech was spare, economical, a quality she admired, even though it made the translation harder. Every word carried weight. Every syllable mattered. It was at the bottom of the final page that she noticed it. The signature on the typeset version read Jan Cavan, but the handwritten signature on the original manuscript tucked inside the envelope, separate from the printed copy, was different. The letters were slanted, hurried, barely legible. What she could make out was not Cavan, but something else entirely. The first letter was unmistakably a K, the second was uncertain. Possibly an O, possibly an A, the rest dissolved into a series of strokes that might have been V, N, or might have been nothing at all. Vera set the pen down and stared at the two signatures side by side. The printed one was clean, authoritative, the kind of thing a ministry clerk would produce with a stamp and a straight edge. The handwritten one was alive with hesitation, as though the person who signed it had been afraid of being seen doing so. She told herself it was nothing. A forgery, perhaps, or a correction. The ministry had its own systems for verifying authorship, and if the printed signature was the approved one, then that was what mattered. Her job was translation, not authentication. She picked up her pen again and continued. But the discrepancy stayed with her. It lodged in the back of her mind like a splinter, small and persistent, impossible to ignore. When she finished, she typed the translation into the Remington, her fingers finding the familiar rhythm. The keys clacked and spat, each strike sending a fresh ribbon of carbon onto the page. She read the finished product aloud under her breath, listening for awkwardness, for phrases that didn't work in English. The poem came out clean, clean enough to be safe. She made two copies, filed one in the outgoing tray, and kept the original on her desk. Something about it made her want to hold on to it, even though she couldn't explain why. At noon, she went downstairs to the canteen. The ministry's cafeteria was a long room with metal tables bolted to the floor and chairs with cracked plastic seats. The food was predictable: soup, bread, sometimes meat if the supply truck had delivered on time. Today it was potato soup, thin and lukewarm, served in a bowl that had been washed but not dried properly. The water spots shimmered faintly in the fluorescent light. Vera ate alone. She always ate alone. The other translators kept to themselves, and the administrative staff preferred each other's company. There was a social hierarchy in the ministry as rigid as anything outside it, and Vera occupied a position somewhere near the bottom, not insignificant, but not important either. She was a functionary, a cog in a machine that produced nothing of consequence. She knew this, and she accepted it. Acceptance was a form of survival. Across the room, she noticed a man she didn't recognize. He was sitting near the window, his back to the wall, his hands folded around a mug of coffee. He was older than most of the staff, perhaps in his 50s, with thinning gray hair and a face that seemed carved from the same material as the building itself, hard, unyielding, impenetrable. He wore a dark suit that was well-tailored but slightly worn at the cuffs, the uniform of someone who mattered without announcing it. Colonel Hansel. She'd heard the name before, though she'd never met him. He was a senior official in the ministry's internal affairs division, responsible for personnel reviews and ideological assessments. His presence in the cafeteria was unusual. People who worked in internal affairs typically ate in their own offices, surrounded by the protective barrier of their titles. Vera looked away and focused on her soup. She had done nothing wrong. She had translated a poem. That was all. But she felt his eyes on her anyway, a weight she couldn't shake. When she glanced back a moment later, he was looking directly at her. His expression was neutral, unreadable. He held her gaze for a beat longer than was polite, then turned back to his window. Vera's appetite disappeared. She pushed her bowl aside and returned to her desk. The afternoon passed slowly. She had another translation scheduled for the next day, a short essay on agricultural cooperatives, and she spent the remaining hours preparing for it, gathering source materials from the ministry's archive. The archive was a windowless room in the basement, lit by a single flickering bulb and smelling of dust and decaying paper. She found the essay she needed, along with three related documents that she copied by hand onto small slips of paper, pressing each character firmly into the grain to ensure the ink would not smudge. The copies would be useful later, even if she couldn't say exactly why. At 5 o'clock, the lights in the corridor went out early. The ministry closed at 6, but in November the darkness came at 4:30 and settled over the building like a shroud. Vera packed her things carefully, the translation, the original manuscript, her notebook, her pen. She placed everything in her satchel and zipped it shut. As she reached for the door handle, the phone on her desk rang. She froze. The phone was for official business only, and it was not supposed to ring after hours. Nobody called her at home. The ministry didn't keep private numbers for lower-level staff. She stared at the receiver as it rang again, louder this time, insistent. On the third ring, she picked it up. Novikova, the voice on the other end was male, unfamiliar. Yes. Stay late tonight. There's an additional assignment. I'm already packing to leave. You'll stay, that's an order. The line went dead. Vera stood in the doorway, the phone pressed to her ear, listening to the dial tone. Her heart was beating fast. She set the receiver back in its cradle and turned off the desk lamp. The room plunged into shadow, the only illumination coming from the corridor outside, where the fluorescent tubes buzzed and hummed. She waited 10 minutes, counting the seconds, telling herself that the order was routine, that late assignments were common during the winter months when the ministry tried to squeeze extra work into the shorter days. But something about the voice, flat, impersonal, devoid of any courtesy, made her uneasy. She went back to her desk and opened the incoming tray. There was a single sheet of paper, typed on both sides. Another translation, this one in French. The subject was a memoir by a displaced writer, someone who had fled Czechoslovakia in the early 50s and settled in Paris. The text was marked confidential in red ink at the top. Vera read through it once, quickly. The memoir was ostensibly about ordinary life, the writer's experiences as a schoolteacher, his observations of rural communities, his reflections on the passage of time. Nothing political, nothing dangerous. But as she read, she noticed something strange. Certain phrases appeared repeatedly, almost like refrains, references to a satchel, to floorboards, to ink. At first glance, they were innocuous, the writer mentioning his old satchel from school, the creaking floorboards of his childhood home, the ink stains on his fingers. But the repetition was too precise, too deliberate, to be mere reminiscence. She compared the French text to the English version that had been prepared by another translator. In the published version, a particular sentence read, "I had a difficult year." In the original French, the same sentence read, "J'ai eu une année difficile." On the surface, identical. But when Vera examined the handwriting of the original scanned onto the page as a photocopy, she saw that the word difficile had been altered. The original had been impossible, and someone had carefully painted over it with a brush, adding the softer word on top. The paint was still slightly raised, catching the light. Impossible, not difficult, impossible. Vera sat very still. The word echoed in her head, bouncing off the walls of her mind like a stone dropped down a well. Impossible. What had been impossible? What had someone wanted to erase? She looked at the photocopy again, studying the altered word. The paint was thin, applied with care, but it wasn't perfect. Under certain angles of light, the original word still showed through, ghostly but visible. Impossible. She thought of the signature discrepancy, the handwritten signature, that didn't match the printed one. Two anomalies in two different texts, both pointing toward something hidden, something buried beneath the surface of approved language. The ministry was built on language. Every document, every publication, every translation passed through layers of scrutiny before it reached the public. Words were edited, rewritten, sanitized until they were safe. Safe meant empty. Safe meant meaningless. And yet, beneath the safe words, something persisted. Something that refused to be erased. Vera closed the folder and put it in her satchel. She told herself she was making a mistake. She told herself to forget about it. But she couldn't. When she finally left the ministry, the sky was already dark. The streets of Prague were quiet, the kind of quiet that comes from fear rather than peace. The tram lines had stopped running early, and the sidewalks were nearly empty. She walked toward the old town, her footsteps echoing on the cobblestones, her satchel heavy against her hip. Her flat was above a printer's shop on Seletná Street. The shop was closed for the night, its windows dark, but she could smell the ink from the floor below wet ink and stale tobacco, the particular scent that meant the press had been running late again. She climbed the three flights of stairs and unlocked her door. Inside, the flat was small and cold. A single stove in the corner provided whatever heat she could muster, but the walls still carried the damp chill of the building's unheated corridors. She hung her coat on the hook by the door, filled the stove with coal, and struck a match. The flame caught and spread, orange and warm against the gray. Her mother was already in bed, asleep in the narrow room that doubled as a bedroom and a kitchen. Elena Novikova was 72 years old, frail but stubborn, and she had lived in this flat for 45 years. She had survived the war, the occupation, the purges, and the changes that had come with each one. She had learned to endure, and she had taught Vera to do the same. Vera moved quietly, not wanting to wake her. She unpacked her satchel and laid the translations on the table. The French memoir sat on top, the altered word still visible in the lamplight. She stared at it for a long time, thinking. Then she did something she had not planned to do. She took the original manuscript, the one with the questionable signature, and a sheet of scrap paper from the printer's waste bin, and she began to copy the poem by hand. Not the printed version, not the approved version, but the original. Every line, every word, every irregularity. She wrote slowly, carefully, her hand moving across the page with a concentration she hadn't felt in years. When she finished, she set the copy beside the original and examined both. They were nearly identical, except for one thing, the signature. On the original, the handwritten signature was faint, uncertain. On her copy, she had written it clearly, deliberately, Jan Kavan, or what she believed it to be. She folded the copy into a small square and slipped it into the inner pocket of her coat. The fabric was thin, but the paper would fit. She could feel it there, a small weight against her ribs, like a secret. She told herself it was nothing, a curiosity, a puzzle to solve later. But as she blew out the lamp and lay down beside her sleeping mother, she knew that it wasn't nothing. It was something. Small, fragile, easily dismissed, but real. Outside, the city slept. Somewhere in the distance, a train whistle sounded, low and mournful, carrying across the rooftops like a prayer. Vera closed her eyes and listened to it fade, wondering what it was mourning and whether she would ever understand. In her pocket, the folded page pressed against her skin. A single page, that was all. just one page, carrying words that someone had tried to erase, that she had chosen to preserve. It meant nothing yet. Where it would lead, she could not say. But she knew, with a certainty that surprised her, that she would not forget it. The stove crackled softly in the corner, and the flat grew warmer. Outside, the wind picked up, rattling the window panes and whispering against the walls. The city held its breath. And somewhere, deep in the foundations of the ministry, the printer below had stopped. The city exhaled. Vera Novikova drifted into sleep, the single page heavy in her pocket, and the question she could not yet name settling deep within her chest.